Welcome back to Right Quick,
a bite-sized pop culture conversation with your favorite queer unfriendly black hotties.
We're unfriendly today because children are still being left behind every day. I'm Nandi K.
And I'm Narancy. Today and every day until November, I'm unfriendly because daylight savings time stole an hour of precious sleep from me.
Oh my God. That's another thing that's been going on this week, contributing to my many displeases. I forgot about that.
Listen, like, nobody can drive for 2 weeks after daylight savings time. They're all over the road. I'm irritable. Time theft.
Yeah, it is. And it's also capitalism, which I hate. Listeners, you might notice that there's a new voice coming at you. We have our first ever guest unfriendly black hottie, Narancy, which... they're a wonderful friend of the pod, family, I dare even say. Narancy, introduce yourselves. Tell the listeners a little bit about you.
All right. Well, I am a creative director for a couple of shows here in Austin, Texas. I'm a poet, a writer. I do a lot of crafts and things like that. My corporate side, we won't talk about,
but no, we don't have corporate jobs here.
No
one only here creative. Is employed. Yeah. No one here is like employed. That's a big,
we're all tenet. Like Tommy. We have,
yeah, exactly. No one's ever seen us at work.
No,
even though apparently somehow we support ourselves. Well, I'm really excited to have Narancy here because today we're going to talk about reading together, and we're actually going to talk about a book we read. And this is like a whole new thing that we've never done on Right Quick. Obviously, this is a pro-literacy podcast. Y'all Please know read. We love people Please to read. We're well-read. But Narancy and I just finished up a book last night that we felt like we needed to talk about. But first, let's talk about reading together. Do you read with other people often?
Not super often. Like, I have a couple of book clubs that I'm in based on like my community commitments and stuff mm-hmm. like that. But when you suggested that we actually start reading together, I was like, oh, what a wonderful way for our friendship to grow and blossom. Yes. And I have just been so grateful to be able to text you what the hell.
No, we're reading this book. That's the best part. I feel like since I really ramped my reading back up last year, the main thing was I wanted to talk to people about the stuff I was reading. And so this was really mm-hmm. fun. And I didn't have a lot of idea what was gonna happen in this book, but I know that this book made people feel a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And you asked me to send you a list of stuff that I planned on reading, and this is why you chose it. Why did you choose this book? And I'll introduce it after, out of all the books that I said.
The title was intriguing to start with. Like, oh, mm-hmm. like that's not something that most books would lead with. And then I kind of read the synopsis and I was like, how are they going to tie that to what's going on here? Like, how is this theme? And then the theme was just there and growing and blossoming under everything. And I was like, oh my God. So powerfully layered, so very, very multidimensional. I still feel a way about it.
Same.
Having finished it. And like, Ahmed's ass.
Yo. Yeah, so today we are talking about Little Rot, a 2024 novel by Akweke Emezi, about a group of friends in a Nigerian city who become entangled in a web of sex, lies, and corruption after a party goes wrong, forcing them to confront a dangerous underworld and the consequences of their choices. The story follows a separated couple, Aima and Kalu, and two sex workers, Ola and Suraya, and a friend, Ahmed, as their lives intersect in a dark, thrilling narrative exploring themes of trauma, power, and morality.
Ahmed is a bad friend.
Yeah, I mean, let's start there because the first thing I have is about relationships. Mm-hmm. And the most prominent relationship in this book, I would say, is the one between Kalu and Ahmed.
That's true. Like, it's very central. Like, they give you this framing in the beginning where, you know, like they're talking about Aima and the fact that they're, you know, breaking up and all of this other stuff, and they were supposed to be so tight. But the actual central relationship, I think, is actually Ahmed and Kalu, because they have history, they have understanding. What they don't have with each other is, like, full honesty and vulnerability. And that leads to some really, really unfortunate circumstances as things go on. I guess we should just put a spoiler alert here because we have to talk about all the mess. There's so much mess.
Yeah, so if you want to read the book and you don't want spoilers, you should stop listening now, go read the book, and come back. This is a podcast. This will be here. You can come back at any time. But we are going to be spoiling the book. We're going to be talking in detail about circumstances and situations that happen. So this is your opportunity to pause, go get it, read it, come back shocked like we were, and listen to us kind of dig in because,
yeah. It's going to destroy you, but in a really beautiful way.
Yeah, and yeah, their relationship is so sad because I think I always think about men like Kalu and Ahmed are quote unquote good men in some ways. And they kind of show how, like, mind you, the bar is low and I'm using that low bar, right? But like,
yes, they would like the be bar seen is in hell. As,
yeah,
they would exactly. be. They would be seen.
They were seen as good TM, men. Good man TM.
Yes. Yes.
But it shows like how flawed even the best man is, how trapped the best man is. I mean, two best friends who literally have experiences between each other that they've never spoken about. There's a tragedy in that to me.
There is. And it's so interesting because one of the things that this narrative does really well is show us queer relationships of all kinds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ones that are out and proud, the ones that are undercover, the people that are in denial. Mm-hmm. You know, Aima is at least bisexual, but also like, this is sinful. I've got to go pray the sin away after spending however many hours having orgasms. It's just, it's very nuanced in its conflict. And the fact that Kalu and Ahmed had these very intimate interactions only to never speak about them again, you know, like one very specific intimate interaction. Mm-hmm. And then to just bury that under layers of faux heterosexuality. It's tragic. And I think one of the things that has stuck with me in this narrative, and we talked a little bit about it, most stories where there's a ton of conflict or there's a lot of drama or mess can be fixed if everybody were just open and honest.
Right.
That is not the case here. Honesty fixes absolutely nothing. Kalu goes in and in a situation he put himself into,
right,
literally blows up everything because, and here I guess we put some kind of like trigger warning, maybe.
Yeah.
Because this has themes of child sexual abuse in it.
Yeah.
The scenario is that they are at a sex party. Ahmed runs these quite often, enough that Kalu is going to these while supposedly being a faithful boyfriend. We'll get to that later.
Right.
And while he's at the sex party, after having broken up with his not fiance, because he doesn't want to propose and he doesn't want to get married, is told by one of the party patrons that there are girls there that are basically being molested, sexually assaulted. And Kalu decides, oh, I've got to see this for myself, busts in through the door of a private suite, uses the password that Ahmed gave him, mm-hmm. and discovers that this is in fact happening, and in a moment of blind rage, punches the man that is currently on top of the seemingly underage girl. And that is when everything completely blows up. Nandi, I need to hear you say daddy-o so I don't hear it in the 1950s way.
Daddy-o. Daddy-o. Okino show.
Yes.
Oh, man. Okay, so before, I don't want to talk about Okino show, but I'm thinking about you talking about how honesty would not solve it. But I can say, if Kalu was honest at the airport with Aima about what was what, like, hey, I don't want to get married. Even if he didn't really tell her fully why, but was like, I never want to get married. You should go off and be without me. Instead of the thing he did, which was like, you don't have to do this. You don't have to go. Kind of like,
leaving that door open a little bit.
Yes, leaving that door open. I think that's the one place that possibly could have at least taken part of the story to not devastate some people. Mainly, I say Aima and Agendu, which want to say the moment between Aima and Agendu. Ooh. Mirrors the Ahmed and Kalu situation, even though we find out about it later than what happened. Which, man, when I got to the end of the first chapter and that was the vibes, I really thought I was in for a different kind of ride. I was like, oh, this is sexy.
And it was, but then wrong.
Yeah, I was like, oh, this is sexy. I was like, okay, okay, they're going home together. They're hot. I used to do X back in the day. It really took me back. I was like, yes. And then it immediately took a turn.
And Kalu would have had to not go to that party. Like, that's the only way that it stops that giant chain reaction. I don't even know if telling Aima solves it. Because he had said, like, oh, why are we bowing to outside pressure? We have our own time, da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, but I don't think saying, I don't want to get married. Because I think if he would have been like, I don't want to get married and closed the door, Aima would have went to London. I think
she should have stayed in London. On the plane. She should have stayed with her parents the whole time. She should never have gone back. No.
Agreed.
She should have stayed. She should have stayed with her parents. She shouldn't have been anywhere near any of this, because I was starting to get frustrated with her. Like, how are you this naive? How?
Yeah.
How?
Also, Agendu starts laying the seeds of Dadio in chapter one as well, because when the friends come over, she's like, oh, I have to go see him tomorrow. I have to have lunch with him. And I was like, oh, but mind you, having no idea. We have no idea. So
we have no idea.
Kalu busts in, punches Dadio, who he does not know is Dadio yet.
No, everybody's in masks.
Yeah, everybody's covered up in masks because this is one of those parties. People don't show their face. Him and Ahmed have this argument where Kalu pretends that this is the first time he's considered the fact that Ahmed might be having underage young girls at these parties.
Again, Kalu, we don't believe you. You need more
people. We don't believe you, Kalu. You've been going to these parties and
for how long? Cheating on your girlfriend for how long? And she's thinking, oh, he's the best. He never does this stuff. He's hanging out with Ahmed and they're best friends. And no, girl, he's in love with Ahmed.
So after he's drug out of this room, because obviously you can't punch your best friend's paying customers.
Right.
He's drug out of the room. And that's when we first see the glimpse of the true closeness of Ahmed and Kalu, because Kalu is enraged, he's angry, he's crying, and they have this very tender moment of physical touch as Kalu confronts Ahmed about having underage girls. And Ahmed is like, "You're crazy if you think you have some moral high ground over me. This is my job. She gets paid amazing. I make sure she's safe. I've taken care of this girl, blah, blah, blah," because Ahmed considers himself some type of savior for this young girl as well.
The savior complex that these men have, all of them. All of them.
And it's only the men who have these savior complexes I'm just thinking of right now. None of the women in this book, not even the young girl,
no,
thinks in this kind of savior, let me save someone.
And almost like an objectification kind of saving.
Yeah.
You know, Ola was definitely like, "You've got to be kidding me. You want me to do what?"
Like, now, let's talk about the relationship between Ola and Ahmed. That's Suraya. So there's Suraya and Ola, who are the two sex workers. They separately have come to New Lagos, which is the fictional like Nigerian city that this happens in. They come to New Lagos on a job. They're sex workers. They fly there. The job is Ola's job, but she doesn't want to fly to New Lagos by herself. It convinces Suraya to come. This is Suraya's first time coming back to New Lagos since she left. We don't know how long ago, but as a child.
Yeah.
And she doesn't really want to go, but she doesn't want to go without. She doesn't want Ola to go by herself. In his first class, she'll have her own room and such and such and such. What do you think about their relationship from the start?
From the start, it's interesting, right? Because they have the kind of closeness that I have seen in people who do sex work or strippers or that kind of thing, where your job is to be objectified, basically. And it doesn't feel tender at first, but it does feel very practical and protective. Almost like, you know how you might fuss and tumble with your siblings, but if somebody pulls up on both of you, you're going to stop.
It's very much like that.
It's very like that. It is not, conversely, like Ahmed and Kalu, who had like this very like tender embrace. Kalu is crying. Ahmed is like really shaken up by all this stuff and starts making different choices based on what his friend has said, you know, like, oh, maybe I do need to take care of these girls better. Maybe I need to do something, all the while feeling like he's kind of a fool because I've not done any of this. And, you know, but when you think about Suraya and Ola, it's like, come, you're going to have all these lovely drinks. You can lay here. You'll get beautiful Instagram pictures. And it's all on me. It's all on me. And so it's almost, it's very sibling-like versus the intimacy that we see on the other side.
It's wild to think about like that kind of the saviorism coming from the side of the men. Because I think even when we look at like Okinosho, Okinosho, who is the biggest religious figure in Nigeria. Of course, he's a pastor. He seems like he's a prosperity pastor. He lives in a massive compound. Ola, who is a trans woman, is the person that Ola and Suraya have flown to see, Dadio Okinosho. And he, as we said, is the person who was with the 17-year-old girl when Kalu came and threw her on the ground. He also thinks he's saving everyone. He's like, only God can judge. And, you know, and he's a man of God and this and this and that. But that does take me to like the theme of Rot, because mm-hmm. since this book is called Little Rot, I think the first time it comes, you start seeing it happen. I don't necessarily know that that was the Rot. I thought they were just having a sexy time in the club. Two friends getting high and then being like, yeah, we're friends, but we can rub coochies. And I liked that.
I mean, that's very friendly to me.
Like, it is friendly to me as well. Yes. We're not saying you can't do that as friends. We actually do advocate.
I advocate for genital contact between friends.
Yes.
Consensual genital contact between friends.
Absolutely. Yes. But that to me is like the first, looking back, it's the first sign of shit not being right. Because at the end of the day, whether Ima is repressed or whatever, mm-hmm. that's not her being who she has shown herself in the past, who she is or whatever, whatever.
Or who she thinks of herself as.
Yes.
It's almost like, if you want to call it rot, the rot was already there, because she talks about coming back to New Lagos and basically like taking God off a shelf or something like mm-hmm. that. Like she had put God off on a shelf while she was in the States, and that freewheeling life that she had with Kalu, where they were just kind of sleeping together, being boyfriend mm-hmm. and girlfriend, that wasn't her. She was a good girl, whatever good girl mm-hmm. means. Mm-hmm. But in framing yourself like that, you now have to cut away all the things that external forces tell you are mm-hmm. bad. And to be clear, Daddy-O does not necessarily care if you are gay, nope. straight, or whatever. When we first see him, he's having sex with a young man in full mm-hmm. view of the entire party. He brought a very young man there. Yep. And then later, you know, we see him with a young woman. Mm-hmm. And so Daddy-O's like, only God can judge. And when he's saying that he's a man of God, I truly think of that in like the capitalistic sense. He is a man. Yes. He is a mm-hmm. man who has like picked up the mantle of God and is using that for his prosperity practice. And in reality, he doesn't really care what sins you have on this earth, as long as you respect him as being of God, which means show me reverence, show me deference, show me respect.
Call and the respect Daddy-O.
Right. Yes.
Everybody got to call him Daddy-O.
Everybody. Too. Everybody has to call him Daddy. That's so weird.
So fucking weird.
Skeevy.
I was like, oh my God. And like him be, it makes me think of like David in the Bible, because you know how they be like, David was a man after God's own heart, but like David was a nigga who was like, kill him, God. That was like something that he literally
he's
prayed.
Like,
David was also gay. He also mm-hmm. killed the king. He also, mm-hmm. you know, killed Goliath, which they try to frame that as good, but how do we really know? You know,
we weren't there. We don't know.
We don't fucking know. And his daddy was a hoe. So, like.
And so he's a hoe because he just learned it.
Oh, well, he was a hoe as well. He stole someone's wife and then
literally
sent him to the front lines to be killed. Right. And so that's what I think of. And I think when people say man of God to me, I immediately think, like, oh, you mean like David?
And he really
and I'm
is.
I'm like, that nigga really ain't is. Shit.
No.
David ain't shit.
Like, look at all this sin. Look at all this sin to the rafters.
Yeah. But and sure. he was, And the absence of homophobia from Daddy-O was like, because so Ahmed, after all this shit happens at this party, he finds out that Okino Sho has put a bounty on Kalu's head.
Mm-hmm.
He's stressed out. He goes to a queer party after he's been up all night, has sex with this famous actor in mm-hmm. a room who is also a man. Okay, Ahmed, gay. We've been new.
Very
but
closeted.
This is the first time we actually see him actually being intimate with a man. We've seen him be with a woman before. He's very rough with women. I guess he kind of the same way with men, I guess.
He kind of is. You know what? I think he's rough with everybody except potentially Kalu.
Kalu.
Because he is, he takes out all his aggression, all his sadness, all his anger in the sex with whoever he's having sex with. Yeah. Yeah. And the only person that sees it and kind of pushes it back in his face, which turns him on even more, is Soraya.
Oof. Baby. So Ahmed goes to the sex party. He has sex with this actor. Later in the day, he's hanging out with Soraya, who we find out this is the first time where we kind of see where these stories start to connect. Mm-hmm. And Soraya and Ahmed have this kind of electric chemistry, and we find out that Ahmed had like saved her from being tied up in a penthouse by one of her Johns and killed the guy. And so they haven't seen each other since then, but while they're hanging out, Ahmed gets a blackmail video from the nigga who was fucking at the club being like, if you don't want nobody to see this, you need to come and meet me somewhere. And this is where it really, where the nail, I would say the nail goes in the coffin right here. Because
yes,
Okino Sho wants to kill his best friend. He's trying to figure that shit out. Kalu is on the run. He's found out on his way home from the party that there's a bounty on his head.
Right. And he's just now, like, I just got to get out of here.
Right. He dips. Now, Ahmed is being blackmailed by this actor nigga. And they pull up to his house. Ahmed is pissed. He's super mad that he had to leave Soraya because he needed to relax after everything happened with Kalu.
Mm-hmm.
But that happens. And this is when shit really, where I was just like,
I was aghast. I was like, oh, this is never going to resolve itself now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he tells this actor, come to my house. We'll have a conversation. And gets this man alone and proceeds to tell him, no, we're going to have sex again. And then kills him.
Kills him during sex.
During sex. Chokes him to death. And is like, oh, I didn't mean to do that. Oh,
I can't believe I did that.
I can't believe that this happened. And while this is happening, Kalu has like gone on the run, found this guy who will hide him out, and is literally hiding him in another sex club, guys. A different one.
And then Ima and Ijendu pull up.
Who's supposed to be in London? Supposed to be in London.
Pull up to Ahmed's house. Ahmed crying in his house, balled up like a little child.
With a dead body on the couch.
A dead body of Sean, this actor on the couch. Damn, why he gotta be named Sean? That's so sad. and yeah, it's not good. And then Ima and Ijendu become accessories to murder.
Right. And Ijendu's like, I know exactly what to do. And we're like, wait, what? And let me actually rewind a bit, because the reason that they are even there is that Ima just spent the whole morning sick, crying, throwing up. How could I have ever been a lesbian? I'm a good girl. I swear I am.
Even though my tushy was nutting unstoppably. Right.
That was the sin in me. I'll never do it again, Jesus. Show me the way to purity. And Ijendu is like, okay, girl, you're a mess. We're going to go over to Ahmed's and get him to talk to Kalu, and it's all going to be okay. Mm-hmm. It's not okay. And can we talk about the fact that Ijendu's brother made a play on Ima, like, oh, you slept with my sister like that, so I guess you'll sleep with me too, even though that nigga is married. Oh, I wanted to reach through the book and slap him. He was only there for like three paragraphs. I hate him.
Hated him so bad. I hate him. Mind you, at first he was like, you not like this, Ima. Like, be you. Like, this is not who you are. Like, just be you. And then just like a nigga.
Just like it. Just like it. Like, oh, is that coochie communal then? Because I'll hit it. I could do it better than my sister.
I doubt it, but.
I doubt it very much.
Man, that. So, Ijendu says, I know what to do. They roll up the actor's body and put it in Ahmed's car, and then Ejendu drives them somewhere. Baby, why they pull up to Okino Shou's house?
Oh my God. At which point you find out, you realize that Ejendu is the goddaughter.
Well, we found out because they had lunch with Ola.
Remember? They did, but I didn't think that they mentioned who. Did they mention Ejendu by name there?
Yeah.
Did they? Okay.
Like, this is my goddaughter, Ejendu. I was like, bitch. I was like, did she know this whole sex? Because I was trying to figure out if Ejendu was also a sex worker. That's the thing I was trying to also figure out in that moment.
In that moment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so they pull up and Ejendu says, Dadio, please help. And
Dadio's like, help this nigga? This nigga that I already didn't kill because, like, he's saying it in his head.
Yeah.
Like, I already didn't kill you when I got punched at your sex party. I'm looking for your boy.
He said, well.
What have we here?
And the man, let me tell you, that punishment, it was Steve. He said, yeah, I don't give a fuck if you killed a fucking gay nigga. I don't care if you gay. He said, I don't care about none of that.
He's like, I don't judge. I'm not worried about that. But now that you're here,
how can you help me? Bring me the girl.
Right. The girl and Kalu. Who is in the fucking wind without his cell phone because that nigga threw it against the wall and broke it in a fit because he ain't shit. And I just...
So, Kalu emails Ahmed from the random nigga's phone at the sex club. Ahmed and Suraya roll up on Kalu to pick him up.
Have to pay a fee, like however many millions, like million rand,
yeah, million nairas to get in. And basically, at the club,
Kalu is like having sex with the sex workers at the club. Weren't you just sad about Ima? Why are you so ain't shit?
And y'all because deserve- of this, Suraya runs into a man who held her hostage when she was but a child and raped her for a really long time. She saw him. He yells her name.
Her real name, not Suraya, but her actual government name.
Yep.
And
she is forced to kill him.
Oh, she took her little knife out of her thigh sheath. And stabbed him all up in the kidneys and then just eased that man down into the booth and said, okay, we gotta go because he's gonna bleed out. But nobody could tell because they're all in a club. And she's like, nah, we gotta go. And Kalu's dumbass. I just, these good men.
It's not going to end well. As you can hear, it's not going to end well.
Mm-mm.
So they all drive to Okino Show's house with the girl, with Kalu. They drop Suraya off at her hotel. She's like, bitch, drop me at my whole fucking hotel. Like, I'm fucking right leaving. Ola goes with them. Ola also has to go to Okino Show's house because she made this deal.
Because they begged her.
They like, said, Suraya begged help. Like,
please make sure that my friend Kalu lives. It's very important to me, Ahmed said in a very straight voice. Please don't let anything happen to my best friend that I've never had sexual contact with before. Oh, didn't Ahmed, like Kalu tried to call him. That's how he broke the phone. Kalu tried to call him and overheard him having sex with another man.
The nigga answered the phone laughing. Yeah. Or he accidentally answered it.
Right.
And the nigga started laughing. He hung up again. But yeah, Kalu heard and threw his phone against the wall. Yeah.
Because he was jealous.
Jealous. Yeah, so they all at Okino Show house. And Okino Show said, Kalu, I have a punishment for you.
They said, I can't kill you, but Here's what we're going to do.
I can kill you inside.
Yes. Since you think you are so high and mighty that you are above it all, here is this girl that you punched me off of, threw me off of. Ugh. You're going to have sex with her, and I'm going to see you finish.
Holy
fuck. Or I'm going to kill you. Take your pick. And your friend Ahmed here is going to watch, and I'm going to watch, and Ola here can watch. And I need you to be quick about it because I have church in the morning and my wife is waiting for me.
He always had church in the morning. He never liked to stay up late. He didn't stay up very late. He
was No, that's why he said, I need them here by 9, he said.
Yeah.
Because he's not trying to stay up late.
Yeah.
He doesn't want his wife to worry.
Man. Yeah, so that's how the whole shit ended up resolving. In the final scenes, we see Kalu and Ahmed in the car driving, and they are both a new level of broken people, which seeing where they started is almost hard to imagine them becoming more broken people than they already were. But obviously after something like that,
and then to twist the knife, Alma's like, it's okay, Kalu. She calls. She goes, it's okay. We don't have to get married. I was wrong. God has shown me that we can just be together in our own timetable. And Kalu's like, I can't do this. We can't be together. We can't ever be together. And Ahmed's whole thing is like, you know what? You're right. Fuck it. And that's it. That's
how it ends.
That's all you get. And at no point does being honest about having killed a gay man in your house, having gotten on the wrong side of the most popular pastor in all of Nigeria, at no point does being open and honest about any of this save anybody from any consequences whatsoever.
At all.
Ima can't even do anything because she's an accessory to murder. She helped roll that man up in a blanket and stuffed him in the trunk and went with them. All
she can do is go home, child.
All she can do is go to London. And we don't even know if she does that.
She better.
She should. She should have been over there. She should never have gone to the States with Kalu, honestly.
I think this story really epitomized the, like, when we see a story, we're seeing it from that time. There was story before. There was story after. Mm-hmm. I definitely wonder, like, what happens. Like, Kalu kills himself, I think. Eventually.
Probably.
Either slowly or quickly.
Right. Either through like alcohol or drugs. Yeah.
He can't live with himself.
No.
Their friendship also doesn't survive.
It doesn't, because Ahmed had to watch that. And he actually thinks about, like, was Kalu actually enjoying that? Mm-hmm. Was he thinking about Ima, or was he thinking about the girl underneath him? And that's messed up. Like, there's no way to come back from that.
Yeah, I guess as we wrap up, let's talk about grief and vulnerability versus shame and agency, which I think is, like, we've set this up throughout our entire conversation of, like, unfortunately, not to lean into gender wars, as we have no gender and we don't have a dog in this fight.
Oh, no, I lost my gender in the war ages ago. Yeah,
it's tough. It's hard out here. But, like, grief and vulnerability for the men. Mm-hmm. And then there's a shame and agency kind of side for all the women, where I said all the women were the people who actually made choices, save for Ima. Ima's kind of a weak ass bitch. But all the other women, very active in their own lives, taking control, making decisions.
And Ima made choices, but, like, sure, she just wouldn't own them after the fact. She wouldn't stand on them. She made that choice. She goes, I'm going to take this little pill. I'm going to go out and party. It's going to be good. And then she tries to yank it all back. No. Which is why she, in the end, doesn't have. And I think that's also interesting as I'm thinking about it. This good Christian girl has done less good than this trans sex worker who kept this man alive that she didn't even know, while being like, you are a trifling hoe. Look what you've done to my friend Soraya. Mm-hmm. And then got that baby girl paid. Got her paid so much that she never has to do this again. Mm-hmm. That little girl was, like, crying and hugging her, like, thank you. Like, this is this real? I get to be free. Mm-hmm. And Ola is the one that does that. There's another
scene. The only person who looks out
The only person looking out for her, and then looking out for Saraya. Saraya's like trying to wash the blood mm-hmm. off of her in the shower. And mm-hmm. Ola is just like, listen, this is not who you are. Your trauma is not who you are. And trying mm-hmm. to talk Saraya through this before she just has a complete spiral and starts blaming everybody for mm-hmm. the fact that she just murdered a man.
Yeah.
She can never come back to Nigeria if anybody saw her stab that man. It's unclear. They might put two and two together. But, like, that's it for her. She's supposed to be on the next plane. Ola made her promise, don't leave without me.
Mm-hmm.
But Ola is the one that actually saves people. She's the one. She's the one. No one else does any
on the front lines.
Listen, and isn't that how it is?
A word. Well, this has been a great episode. Shout out to the author Okweke Emezi. This is my first read of theirs, and likewise, I cannot wait to read more. I know their work gets people talking. I know they have a book that has some ancestral elements. To me, that's very Octavia Butler-ish. And so I want to read more work that makes me uncomfortable. This is great. A big thanks to our producer and audio Adonis, Aaron Rand Freeman.
Ooh, thank you.
Who are you, Narancy?
I am Narancy, and if you would like to find me anywhere, I'm on Instagram at narancy.speaks. That's narancy.speaks, like talking. It's pretty bare over there right now, but a lot of my like poetry readings and all the creative stuff that I'm going to be up to over the next year is going to be there. So check it out.
Check it out, y'all. And I'm Nandi K. Y'all can find me on Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky at Nandi, K-A-Y-Y-Y. See y'all next time.
Right Quick is a podcast for The Agenda Productions, created by Nandi K and co-hosted by Vance Go. Aaron Rand Freeman is our mouthy producer. Theme music by Luke Santi. Art by Sonia Honeycutt. If you like what you heard, subscribe, rate, review, and follow us on Patreon at The Agenda Productions.